Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
7:03 Saturday morning. It's Hardy here on 98.5 The Sports Hub with the Sports Hub Golf Club. Sean Silver in the studio taking care of the updates today. Looking up at the replay of last night. I think that bullpen might be a problem. How about this? A little bit more on that later today. A lot more on the Patriots regular season opener and a little bit of golf here this morning as we come off of the final Labor Day tournament. The Dell Technologies Championship wrapped up on Monday at TPC Boston in Norton, Mass. And I got to say, I was way more bummed out about this thing being gone from Labor Day toward the end of it than I was in the abstract. Just thinking about this tournament going away, I was like, well, it was a good run, but you know, it's a golf tournament and it'll be back in some form a couple of years from now when they start playing this thing in early August. Still the second leg of a FedEx Cup playoff series, but it's only going to be three events instead of four. And, you know, what's a big deal? It's a golf tournament. And then I realized what bummed me out about this. It's the fact that for the last 10, 12, 15 years, however long it's been that I've been going to this thing, at least 12, it's given me something to do on Labor Day weekend. And Labor Day weekend, I decided to borrow from the midday show, sneaky bad holiday. I understand that Labor Day and its importance and the labor movement in this country, I get all that. I'm saying as an actual holiday, as time away from work and regular life, Labor Day sucks. It's no good. It's the summer's over. You've already taken your summer vacation. Some kids go back to school before the start of Labor Day. If not, you're going back right after Labor Day. What are you going to get away? You're going to get away for, oh, maybe they'll just go down the Cape for a few days. Oh, you're not the only one who thinks that. It sucks. It's no good. So now I will be forced into trying to come up with something to do for Labor Day weekend because you're given the day off in many cases. I mean, I haven't had the day off. I haven't had the entire weekend off in years. But now I don't have an excuse. Oh, it's Labor Day. What are you going to do for Labor Day weekend? I never had to come up with anything. I'm working the golf tournament all weekend long. Not anymore. And the other reason why it sucked is because it was such a good tournament this year, and it was fun to see Bryson DeChambeau win back-to-back events and really establish himself as the real deal, which is what he did. I mean, it's easy to try and look past this guy as just being too quirky for it to work on tour. Everything about this guy, the different swing method, the same length irons, the super oversized grip so that he can grip the club in the palm of his hand instead of the fingers of his hand, which just goes against so much of what you're taught from the first time you pick up a golf club and you really start swinging it. With, you know, any kind of instruction or any kind of pointers from anybody, you know, you hold that thing in your fingers. You know, that's where you hold that golf club. There's been a little bit more into the palm of the hand type of movement here. I would say the first time I really read about it was going back to long drive guys and then Hank Haney, who tried to get Tiger Woods and did for a time, got Tiger Woods to grip at least the club in the palm of his left hand. as a means to do a few different things. Number one was control, and I think another one was to fight the hook. But for the most part, people and players will grip the club, or at least try to grip the club more in their fingers. Not Bryson DeChambeau. Nope. Fatten up those grips. Hold it in the palm of your hands. Same length irons. Just change the loft. And of course, swing that club like an unfolded lawn chair. Just, you know, stiff and not at all hingy. Just trying, you know, few moving parts. That putting stroke, which looks borderline illegal. Isn't an arm a part of the body? If you're not allowed to anchor the club, isn't he kind of anchoring that to his left forearm? I know people have kind of questioned this, but whatever, they're letting him do it. It's obviously legal. But looking at it, you always thought, this doesn't seem sustainable. And he put together, I mean, two great weeks of golf and a really impressive Dell Technologies Championship to put himself in very nice position for this FedEx Cup playoff series. So it was fun watching that. And of course, it was fun watching Tiger. And I posted the shot. My son asked me if I could take him out on the course to see Tiger after I got done working one day when I thought for sure he had, you know, been to the kids' village and the Dell Technologies interactive zone and, you know, flown the virtual drone and all that stuff. I thought for sure, you know, I had a little Shake Shack. He was going to want to go home. He said, no, he wanted to go out on the course and see Tiger, which he had never asked to see an athlete or go to any specific event at all before. He said, absolutely, we can go out there and see Tiger. And we walked backwards on the course, found ourselves a spot around 11 green around the par three. Sure enough, one or two groups later, here comes Tiger. Missed the green, but pitched up and sank a pretty lengthy par save. We got to see him tee off on 12. It was great. It was great. I'm going to miss it next year. It'll be interesting to see how this tournament comes back in terms of popularity and I guess importance once it is not unique in that Friday through Monday finish. You know, and I talked a little bit about it, I think, with Rich Brady, who was the tournament director, and he said, yeah, it was unique. You know, it was a Friday through Monday thing. It just sets it a little bit apart from the other tournaments. But next year, it'll take the year off. Following year, 2020, it'll be back early August in some form, presumably again at TPC Boston. Moving on to this week, where, as you heard in the update there at the top of the hour, Xander Schauffele is your leader after two rounds. He's 13 under par at the BMW Championship. Rounds of 63 and 64. Justin Rose, not too shabby. He's two strokes behind after going 66-63. Then a group of players at 10 under, including Keegan Bradley, Ricky Fowler, and Hideki Matsuyama. The story from the first day, though, was talk about too good to sustain. Both Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods firing opening round 62s to share the lead after one round. And I really thought for a moment that this could be Tiger establishing himself early in a tournament in order to get his first win on his most recent comeback here. That would have been phenomenal. He faltered yesterday and made bogeys at 17 and 18 to shoot an even round 70. So he remains at 8 under par after that opening round 62. It's par 70 as they play it there for the BMW Championship. So Tiger Woods now 5 strokes off the lead. Not saying he's out of this one by any means, but he could have really started to pull away with it after the second round on Friday. Unfortunately, he did not. For those who want to see Tiger win again, and you can count me in that group. There was some good news for Tiger earlier this week, though, as it was presumably going to happen, but you never know until you know, and that is he was one of the captain's picks for the 2018 Ryder Cup team. This U.S. Ryder Cup team for this year is absolutely stacked. 15 of the top 16 players in the world. Think about that. It's unbelievable. These two teams that are be putting together for the U.S. and European side, I mean, they are stacked, as well they should be. For Team USA, it'll be Dustin Johnson, Bubba Watson, Ricky Fowler, Patrick Reed, Jordan Spieth, Webb Simpson, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, Phil Mickelson, captain's pick, Tiger Woods, captain's pick, Bryson DeChambeau, captain's pick. Still one to be determined. Team Europe, there are a few that are, again, were presumed to be picked. So joining Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy, Francesco Molinari, Tommy Fleetwood, Tyrrell Hatton, Alex Noren will be Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter, Henrik Stenson, and Paul Casey. Talked with Henrik Stenson, by the way, earlier in the week at the Dell Technologies Championship, and had a really nice moment there at that player panel that I hosted. And there's some really good ball busting going back and forth between Henrik Stenson and Kevin Chappell and Daniel Berger. And I thought we were all really getting along. And then when I requested Henrik Stenson as an interview after his round on Sunday, the PGA Tour media woman told me, Henrik respectfully declines your interview request. He said he doesn't have the energy for your sense of humor today, which I thought was great. I think I've got some real estate in his head. I'm going to use it to the U.S. advantage come Ryder Cup time. Might just, you know, tweet him a friendly hello, see if he sees it. Maybe sap some of his energy. One of the players I just mentioned, Tyrrell Hatton, he sat down with us at the Dell Technologies Championship. If you missed that interview, we're going to replay that next. And also, what I feel was the best interview out of the entire weekend. You know, golfers came over and sat down with us and, you know, tournament director and writers and you know, I had a really good group of people. Brad Knighton, by the way, came by from the New England Revolution. He ended up getting the start in the next Revs game, and they got their first win in the last 10 matches. So, you know, some nice moments there. But a guy by the name of Keith Mitchell sat down with us. He was phenomenal. So we'll listen to our interviews with Tyrrell Hatton and Keith Mitchell. And then coming up after that, since we're talking so much about Ryder Cup, John Feinstein will join us. He has a new book. It's called The First Major. It's all about the Ryder Cup history and more specifically the 2016 Ryder Cup. So John Feinstein will join us here on the phone in a little while as we continue here. But coming up next, a couple of interviews in case you missed them from last weekend's Dell Technologies Championship.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
I just got a very nice voicemail from Lenny Clark, my buddy Lenny. Driving around listening to the show, he said, I did the impossible. I made him enjoy golf. I would play you the voicemail, but it's profane. If you can imagine that. Lenny left me a voicemail with naughty words in it. Thanks, Lenny. Glad you're listening, buddy. So welcome back, Sports Hub Golf Club. Here's what happened over the Dell Technologies Championship weekend. We had a number of players sit down with us. I got two of them I'm going to play for you. Number one, and I'll tell you right now, I'm saving the best for last. Guy named Keith Mitchell, or Mitch, as he is called sometimes. More on that in a moment. But first, I want to play for you this guy, Tyrrell Hatton, who I'd never heard of. I mean, people think, and I've been called horrible things when it comes to golf. Among them, hardo. A hardo is not a good thing to be in life. I don't know when hardo became like the worst thing you can be as a person about anything, but being a hardo, that's no good. And I got called a hardo for golf several times, especially last weekend. And I can't even entirely deny it. But even as a hardo, I don't know who Tyrrell Hatton is. What do I know from Tyrrell Hatton? So much so that after he fired his 63 out there at TPC Boston and came over to interview with us, A, I didn't know who he was, and B, you'll hear him. You'll hear his sit down here and called him Tyrrell. I'm a Detroiter, you know. You should I was born in Detroit. You sit someone down with me and tell me his name is spelled T-Y-R-E-L-L. I'm like, that's Tyrell. I went to school with a Tyrell. No, Tyrell. So I got the dope slap up the back of the head from the PGA Tour media guy, and you'll hear me immediately correct myself here.
The tournament leader, Tyrell Hatton, is joining us right now. I'm 1,000 pardons. I don't want to insult you, but I think it's probably no surprise that you're not quite a household name, maybe in Boston. Certainly in England.
I don't know about that.
Well,
a couple more rounds like this, you certainly will be.
Yeah, hopefully. That'd be nice.
Let's talk. Can we talk? I don't want to talk all about golf. I know you'd probably rather talk about Liverpool. we can talk some football.
Yeah.
And we've been talking American football today. We can talk about anything you want. But when you shoot a 63 in the second round out here today, everyone's going to want to talk to you. Conditions seem to be favorable out there today. But for you, it must have seemed easy when you put together a string of birdies like you did out there.
Well, obviously, conditions this morning were perfect. There was hardly any breeze. The greens were a lot more receptive today, so it was easier to kind of go straight at pins. Yesterday afternoon, it was pretty awkward to get it close with the wind swirling round, and some greens seemed to have a massive bounce forward. Other greens would just kind of stop where it was. But today, it was a lot more consistent. Balls kind of stopping fairly close to where they land, which is good. Obviously, I'm very happy with how I hit it. Gave myself so many chances. It's been a great day, and hopefully I can continue that over the next 2 days.
How does this course measure up? I mean, we were talking about it a little bit earlier, but, you know, from a typical course week to week, but now it's playoffs and there's a lot more on the line for you guys. How does the course measure up toward what you see week to week out on tour?
I think it's fairly similar, to be honest. The golf course is great. It's in fantastic condition. I'd say it's pretty tricky if you miss greens. Just with chipping out the rough here, it's quite thick. And it's easy to leave it a few feet in front of you, or it comes out hot and you've got like a 20-foot par putt kind of thing. So I'd say that's one of the toughest things. If you're missing greens, it is hard to make par. But like I said, the golf course is really good. It suits my eye. I feel comfortable out there, which is nice. So hopefully I can keep playing well.
We do share something in common with you, and that is a team owner, John Henry, who owns the Red Sox here locally. Also the owner of your favorite soccer team, Liverpool.
Yeah.
What do you think of Mr. Henry as an owner?
Well, it's been good for the last few years.
You can say whatever you want.
No, it's obviously since Klopp's come in, the manager, he's given him plenty of money to spend, which is great because he's improved the squad. We've won our first four matches this season, which is great. Hopefully that continues. I think it's about time Liverpool won the league again, although my manager's shaking his head. He's a Man United fan, so
oh boy,
he's got nothing to smile about at the moment, to be
cheering
honest.
Cheering for Man United is like cheering for the Yankees. They don't need anyone else cheering for them, so they're fine. So I'll say one more thing, Tyrell, before we let you go. Did you leave any strokes out there? You parred both of the par fives on the front nine. Do you feel like 61 was in play today?
Well, to be honest, the second hole was my 11th of the day.
Yeah.
And I actually made a really good par there because I hit it right with my second shot. So I hit it in the water. So I got up and down from the drop zone, which was 106 yards we had. So that kind of kept momentum going. And that helped me. Obviously, after the next three holes, I made three birdies, which was great. Seven was a little bit frustrating. They've moved the tee up there today, so it's obviously reachable in two. So to walk off a par... Yes, you might feel like you've dropped a shot there, especially when I was in the middle of the fairway. We only had 257 yards to the front of the green, which obviously it's warm today, so the ball's travelling. So it was easily reachable. So yes, I feel like I maybe dropped a shot or left a shot there, but I mean, look, I've shot 8 under. I'm very happy
it's
with that.
It's tough to complain about 63, right?
Well, I'm pretty good at complaining, to be honest, but I'm very happy with how today went.
Well, good, and I'm happy to pay some attention to someone other than Justin Rose and Tommy Fleetwood. They've been hogging the attention for your country's golfers for too long, so let's give some to you, too. Tyrell Hatton, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, there he goes. That was Terrell, not Tyrell. Terrell Hatton here on last weekend, Dell Technologies Championship weekend. Now, I said the best interview of the weekend was another guy I'd never heard of on tour. I mean, now, this one, I think I have an excuse. New player, but it does not mean that other guys out on the course did not know who Keith Mitchell was. And the best part about this happened right as he sat down, because he sat down and he saw the leaderboard, he saw where he finished, and he saw who he was sitting next to on the leaderboard. You'll hear it happen as it happened just last weekend at the tournament.
Right next to Tiger Woods right now on the leaderboard. Keith, you could be playing with Tiger tomorrow.
I was nervous about to do this radio show. I am extremely nervous now about potentially playing with Tiger tomorrow.
How about this? This could be fun, huh?
I've never played with Tiger. I feel like a normal fan when I'm on the driving range and Tiger's hitting balls next to me. So that's going to be fun.
Well, he may be walking by here in a moment if you just want to jump in front and say, "Hey, buddy, I just wanted to get a rapport going with you just before we tee it up together tomorrow."
He's right here. Maybe you should just give him a high five. Yeah, there's his autograph.
There's a chance we're going to be playing together. My name's Keith. Have you met him before?
In passing. I don't know. He might know who I am, but that's tough.
You might be able to tell he's walking by right now.
But, Keith, I mean, you have said before we sat down that the crowds here, and this is your third round at the TPC Boston. You're a rookie, so you haven't had a chance to, you know, play this event before. You had some nice things to say about the crowds here in Boston.
And it's true. I've played a decent schedule. I've played a lot of cool tournaments. I played the Players this year. I played Hilton Head. Excuse me, a lot of great tournaments. And this tournament by far is the best fans. I've heard my name, like, "Let's go, Keith," "Get him, Mitch," everything.
Got a nickname.
Yeah, they're calling me by my nickname from high school. And usually when you hear your name from the crowd, it's a family member or a friend. But this week, it's just been awesome people just rooting us on. And I've just enjoyed it so much.
Good. If you are paired with Tiger tomorrow, and I guess we'll find out, things got to shake down a little bit. How does that change your approach? It must feel a little bit different playing in front of, if nothing else, a bigger gallery.
Today was one of the bigger galleries we've played in, period, because the group behind me was Rory and the group behind him was Tiger. So it felt like everybody was running up to our group to watch, to get a good seat for when they came through. So
So you were CT Pan yesterday. Because
yeah.
I did the same thing with my son yesterday. I'm like, "Oh, CT Pan, he's a nice player. His wife caddy for him. Don't worry about him, though. We're just waiting here for Tiger's coming in like two more groups."
Yeah, that was me. That was me. Maybe we got a few more fans out of it, but it was fun.
We were talking a little bit earlier about the course setup, and you know, one of the guys we had on earlier said, "Boy, the tour loves moving day on Saturday. They like to set it up so that there's some birdies out there to be had." How much different was the course set up today as opposed to the first couple of days?
Well, I think Saturdays are probably the most fun because the golf course just starts, well, I guess Sunday this week, but just starts to firm up a little bit since there hasn't been rain. So it plays faster, but the pins are a little bit in slow areas where you can use the slopes to get the ball to the hole. So it plays completely different than it does usually on Thursdays. And then Sundays, they just put the pins, not all the time, but a lot of time in really tough places, so you have to play more defensive. Saturdays, you can really use the ground. It's firmed up, and you can try to get the ball close to the hole. And if you do that, you can shoot a low score. But the problem is, with the course firming up, if you hit in the wrong spot, it's really tough to get up and down.
Yeah. And it gets more difficult as the day goes on. I mean, I don't know if the greens are getting bumpier out there or if they were for you, but it seems like the guys later on, especially at this golf course, have said, yeah, things do tend to get a little dicier out there toward the end of the day.
There's definitely some brown spots on the greens, which is not a bad thing. It just means they're getting firmer and faster.
Yeah.
Players like us like that way. It's like a British Open in terms where you have to use the ground and be creative. So usually by the third and fourth round, that's when the greens really start getting good. But they also get a little crusty later.
All right, Keith Mitchell's with us right now. You were the runner-up at the tournament in the Dominican this year, correct?
Correct.
Is that the one that Tony Romo got the sponsor's exemption for?
It was.
What do you think about him trying to get out there? And just so you know, I've said from the start, would you stop it? You know, you were already an NFL quarterback. He's great in the broadcast booth.
Yeah, but you're not the best job ever.
You're not going to do this. I mean, and forget about taking away a spot from somebody else. You're not good enough to do this. Would you please stop?
So I love when Steph Curry and Tony Romo plays. I think that's a good way to bring more people to our game, and it also lets people know how good we are, because Tony Romo is an incredible golfer.
Incredible
in
golfer.
Terms of the general public.
Right, but compared to you, he sucks, and he can't play with you.
Well, you know what? I love his determination to give it a shot. I think we can all say that he won't make it through. With the safe bet. Now, am I rooting for him to make it through? Absolutely.
Because it brings
but
more obstacles.
I have never made it through second stage of Q school, or first stage of Q school, and I've never made it through final stage. The way my career worked, I was exempt through different stages from the Latin American Tour, and then got a sponsor exemption on the web and played really well. So guys that are out here on the PGA Tour have never made it through web Q school. It's so hard. And Tony Romo is trying to achieve probably the hardest thing in golf right now. So, I mean, I hope he does it, but I've never even done it. It's impossible.
That's crazy. That guy's at your level, and just, you know, and once you make it here, you're succeeding. I mean, you had a great round today. A couple of bogeys on the front on the par threes. But, you know, those aside, put yourself in a position to where, I'll just say it one more time before you let you go, you might be playing with Tiger tomorrow.
Well, we might be playing with Tiger, and we also got to play well to get in next week. I think we're right on the bubble on that 70th number. So
you want to be there in Atlanta for the end of this.
Absolutely, but in order to get in Atlanta, we got to be there next week too. So good round tomorrow. If weather with Tiger, without Tiger, hopefully we get the job done.
All right, real quick, we were talking about this before you started, but you're Georgia Bulldog.
Yes.
Obviously, the Patriots added a couple of Georgia Bulldogs in the first round this year. One of them is not going to get to play this year, unfortunately, but Sony Michel is. How excited should Patriots fans be about this kid?
I think he is an all-around back. We had Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. Nick Chubb got drafted to the Browns, but Nick Chubb is straight up and down the field. Sony Michel, you can put him out at receiver if you have to. He can run up the middle. He's got the best, probably, vision of any running back I've seen. And like I said, I've seen a lot worse running backs do a lot better at the Patriots with that coaching scheme and Tom Brady back there. So I'm excited about Sony Michel. And you got David Andrews up there blocking. He's a Georgia boy. I think y'all are going to have you always have great seasons, but this is some good offense for you guys.
Well, Keith Mitchell, I'm glad you're high on the Patriots picks. I'm glad you played well today. I'm looking for big things from you tomorrow if you're in that group. But big things otherwise, I'd love to see you there at the end of it. So thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
And I'm glad people are calling you by your nickname. But let's keep that going. Yeah. It's Mitch, everybody. Keith Mitch, we call him Mitch. Joining us here as we broadcast live from the DTC on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
As promised, here he is joining us on the Sports Hub Golf Club. It's John Feinstein, author of a couple of my favorite golf books of all time, A Good Walk Spoiled and The Open, and now the author, I should say, of the first major. It's the inside story of the 2016 Ryder Cup. John, it's a pleasure to talk to you. How are you?
My pleasure, Hardy. Good to talk to you.
So let's back up a little bit, because A Good Walk Spoiled, to me, was the first time I had ever read a book about golf that really took you inside the ropes, a season on the PGA Tour. Were there guys doing golf books like this one or like A Good Walk Spoiled before you kind of got into this genre?
Well, obviously people were writing golf books. I don't know that anybody sort of took on the tour as an entity the way I did with A Good Walk Spoiled, which came out actually in 1995. And my thought was that I wanted to give people an idea of what it was like for everyone, not just for the stars. There's a tendency, I think, in publishing for people to want to focus on stars, and I understand that. My first book, A Season on the Brink, was on Bob Knight, who was a pretty big star. But I thought that much of the fascination to me as a failed golfer and as a reporter was about the guys who have to go to qualifying school, about the guys who are fighting just to keep their jobs, about guys who lose their jobs in golf, in addition to the stars. And that was the approach I took to A Good Walk Spoiled. And I guess people found it unique because it did become the best-selling sports book of all time. And in regard to the book we're talking about today, the first major, it was significant because one of the first events I went to in researching A Good Walk Spoiled was the 93 Ryder Cup at the Belfry, which, as you probably know, is the last time the U.S. won on foreign soil. And the minute I walked onto the grounds there, I knew that someday I wanted to go back and take a real hard look at the Ryder Cup, because the passion you feel, the intensity, the nerves that the players on both sides have is like nothing else in golf, because it's the only time, and I don't even count the President's Cup, that's like comparing a club championship to the Masters, where guys are playing, and it's not as much so much for their country, although that's part of it, but they're playing for 11 other guys. And for the captain and the vice captains. And that's unique in golf because it's an individual sport. But every 2 years for 1 week, it becomes a team sport. And the intensity is totally different than other weeks when guys are just playing for themselves. So I made a mental note to myself, you know, Ryder Cup book someday if you get the chance. And it only took me 23 years to get around to doing it. But I got very lucky that the year I did it was this remarkable event at Hazeltine when the U.S. finally won again, and there were all sorts of remarkable storylines, really, on both sides.
Yeah, and it's John Feinstein, by the way, author of the first major. It's all about the 2016 Ryder Cup. The book starts off talking about you being there in 93, and then right. Kind of goes through the history of it, which a lot of this I didn't know, including the fact that it was one guy in particular who decided, you know what, the U.S. is just really beating the bag out of this English and Irish team, you know, Ryder Cup after Ryder Cup. Let's open it up to all of Europe. And whose idea was that?
It was Jack Nicklaus. Right. And really, of all the amazing things Jack has done in golf, to me, that ranks right up there, because he took the Ryder Cup from being an event that almost no one paid attention to, because, as he said, the U.S. was pummeling Great Britain and Ireland every 2 years. Nobody really cared because there was no suspense in the event. Jack said that, you know, for him as a player, it had almost become hit and giggle golf because there wasn't any doubt that the U.S. was going to win. And he liked the idea of representing your country on both sides of the Atlantic. And Seve Ballesteros had shown up in 1976 by finishing second at the British Open at the age of 19. And Jack's thought was, there's probably more coming besides Seve from the continent. So why not open it up to Europe and make it more competitive? And as he said to me when I interviewed him for the book, he said, I had no idea what it was going to become, that it was going to become so intense and sometimes over the top, as we saw with the War by the Shore, as we saw at Brookline, and as we saw at times at Hazeltine. But it's become one of the great events in sports, and it would not have become that if not for Jack.
And you mentioned Jack a couple of times in the early portions of the book, and some of the stuff I knew about, the concession. But, you know, there's the great story about him telling his playing partner to pick up his putt, even though he was right inside of where Jack's was. He's like, yeah, pick that up, I'll make it. Or him telling the captain, give me Tom Weisskopf. I know he hasn't been playing well, but I'll straighten his ass out. And
yeah,
he did.
I'll take care of it.
I know. It's stuff that only you would only believe it with Jack Nicklaus, and maybe another guy who's going to factor into this next Ryder Cup, Tiger Woods. But Tiger is a part of this 2016 Ryder Cup that you write about as a captain. And really, this is the one, as you said, the one where they kind of, you know, figured it out once again. How important was it to the U.S., this particular 2016 Ryder Cup, in terms of their overall standing, if you want to do like a lifetime count in terms of their Ryder Cup success?
What was the old saying? I can't remember which general said it to his men the night before a battle, defeat is not an option. That was pretty much where the U.S. Ryder Cup team was in 2016. They had lost 8 out of 10 Ryder Cups, 7 out of 8. They'd had the meltdown at Medina when they were up 10 to 6 and ended up losing on home ground. Europe had embarrassed them in 2014. Phil Mickelson and Tom Watson had had their mutual takedown after the matches were over, and they formed this Ryder Cup task force to figure things out. And I'll say this. I mean, I made fun of the task force like everybody else did. Nicholas had the best line. He said, if the task force helps us make more birdies, then it's a good thing. But what the task force did was it allowed the U.S. to go away from the tradition that you only captain one time. And they gave Davis Love the job again, because Davis did a good job at Medina in 2012. He, the captain is so responsible for the pairings the first 2 days. The singles is more of a lottery, but he got him a 10-6 lead, and then they couldn't hold it. So to me, that was a brilliant move, making Davis the captain. And when Davis figured out that they were going to ask him, he called the other players who were on that Ryder Cup task force. It was Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Ricky Fowler, Jim Furyk, Steve Stricker. And he said, if I do this, I need each of you to say to me, you will do anything I ask you to do to help us win. And all five of them agreed. And as you know, Tiger Woods had been a very reluctant Ryder Cup player. He didn't really want to play. He had to because of publicity. It wasn't a major championship, which was always his goal. He wasn't friendly with the other guys on the team because his father told him not to be. And he committed full bore to being a vice captain, to the point where the guys before the matches began were joking about how Tiger kept calling him all the time saying, what about this? How about playing with that guy? And Brant Snedeker said one day Tiger was on the phone just going on and on and on. And he finally said to him, Tiger, I got to go. You need a hobby. And that's not the Tiger Woods we've all known for so many years.
John Feinstein, author of The First Major. It's about the 2016 Ryder Cup. Is this going to be the type of major that sustain year after year after year just because of the amount of importance that the players place on it,
right,
as opposed to outside observers?
Yeah, no, there's no question that it's become a huge deal for the players. It took a little while longer for the Americans to get it, because for so many years when the current generation of American players was growing up, the older guys, the U.S. won all the time. The Ryder Cup wasn't that big a deal. But these younger guys, you know, the Ricky Fowlers, the Jordan Spieths, the Patrick Reeds, guys who were in their 20s, they remember Europe kicking our butt.
Yep.
On a regular basis, and they're like, wait a minute, we don't want to be part of that. We don't want to be part of losing teams year after year. And so now it's become very intense on both sides. And, you know, I was with Rory McIlroy last night, and we were talking about Hazeltine and his frustration at losing. He said, there's never been a week in my life when I played harder or wanted to win more than that week, because I knew I had to play great for us to have a chance. And I said, well, guess what? The same thing's going to be true in Paris. And he said, yeah, I know. And I'm ready for it mentally. And they want to win so badly. And I think fans feel that. And as a, you know, someone who gets a chance to walk inside the ropes, I certainly felt it. And someone who, you know, because I know a lot of the players, obviously, there's no feeling of passion and intensity like the Ryder Cup. I mean, the majors are great. I love all four majors for different reasons, but they're not the same as the Ryder Cup. It's because you are playing for your country, and they do play all the anthems at the opening and closing ceremonies, and you are playing for your teammates, and everybody has memories of past Ryder Cups. You know why Sergio Garcia is on the European team? Partly because he's played so well in the past, but also because the Europeans know that the Americans don't like Sergio, and he gets under their skin. And that's one of the reasons why Thomas Bjorn chose him, because he knows that if Sergio can play well, it will really bug the American players.
You could say the same thing about Patrick Reed, except A, he won the Masters, and B, I don't think the Americans like Patrick Reed either. But that's a whole nother conversation.
They like him when he's their teammate. I can tell you that much.
I believe it. talk about not knowing how things were going to go. I had a feeling this would be a bad interview. You were great, but I stunk because I think I knew too much. I've read too much of your stuff. I've read too much of this. It's like Larry King would never read a book before he would interview the author. So he would ask good questions. I felt like I asked crap questions, but you were good. So that's all that matters.
Let me tell you one reason that I'd rather be interviewed by you than Larry King. And Larry was a friend of mine for a long time, but when he was doing his overnight show, and you were in the studio, because you always went to the studio. And when he went to the phones, caller, you know, he'd say, "Houston, you're on." And the guy would ask the question, and I'd be answering, and I'd look across at Larry. He's asleep. He would just go to sleep. And then you'd finish the answer, and all of a sudden he'd pop his head up, and he'd say, "Boston, you're on." But it was very distracting to be looking at the guy across from you, and he's asleep.
It's like, what? Maybe I'm not all that interesting. Oh, that's a...
Because I think I am.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, I didn't fall asleep. Now, I don't think anybody's going to be falling asleep during the Ryder Cup as it comes up here, because
I don't think that'll be an issue.
Too much at stake, and there's too much to think about, and a lot of it is in your book, The First Major, Inside Story of the 2016 Ryder Cup. John Feinstein, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it, John.
Hardy, my pleasure.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Nineteenth hole is presented by Deep Eddy Vodka, authentic American vodka made in the heart of Texas. Deep Eddy Distilling Company, Austin, Texas. 40% alcohol by volume. Please day drink responsibly. As a nod to last weekend, I would say the 19th hole was essentially anywhere on the TPC Boston. There's people out there drinking. This is a real reunion of sorts happening here in the studio right now, because Ryan Johnston and Marshall Hook are here to take over in just a few moments. My two co-hosts, well, Christian Arkham was there on the first day, but Ryan and I did a couple of shows together.
Marshall wouldn't lower himself to work on a Saturday morning.
No. Marshall and I did the longest show in 98.5 The Sports Hub history. Not in terms of...
Beating the record that had been set on by us on Sunday.
That was probably second. Third was probably an actual like 9-hour Christmas Day shift that somebody put in at some point at some time. But it was only 4 hours. Marsha, how long did that Monday show feel?
17 hours.
17 hours is the over under. But I think you both can attest there was a lot of drinking going on that golf course last weekend.
I saw a person or two maybe imbibing the nice frosty beverage, but I thought it was mostly under control.
Yeah, but it was a good time. I'm gonna miss it. I'm gonna miss having something to do on Labor Day weekend, because now, as Ryan and I talked about a little bit, gonna have to come up with something to do on Labor Day, which is not
you have to do something with the family.
Not a good holiday. And again, nothing against the labor movement. Certainly, I understand the importance of Labor Day, but in terms of having to fill that weekend with activities, sucks. Just sucks.
See, I'm not one that needs to fill my weekend with activities. I'm perfectly comfortable and, you know.
You never feel compelled to, you got the day off. What are you going to do with the long weekend? You got the day off.
I get so few days off that my days off are basically, hey, I can sit and do nothing today.
Oh, those are the best days. You know,
throw something in the smoker and just let it go for like 6 hours, and I'll just sit here and smell it and have a few beers along the way.
That is nice.
Yeah.
All right, so you and Hook.
Yes, Marshall Hook and me will take you through the next 3 hours. Well, mostly 3 hours, because apparently Marshall's leaving early.
Well, he's got a 5K to run today, which did you contribute to his 5K?
I have not. I am not a good person.
I think Sean Silver did. I don't know why you need to raise money to run in a 5K.
Well, Marshall's not in shape, so, you know, I think we all need to encourage.
One of our producers, Tracy Clements, is back there right now. She runs a 5K to warm up for her.
She runs
real
a 5K
runs.
To get to work.
Somebody, I think it was Bird, who raised money for a 10K walk. I'm like, like, raised all this money. I'm like, I understand the cause and everything, but why do you need encouragement to go out and walk 6 miles?
I mean, it's not even the encouragement. Like, you're going to do it anyway, right? I mean, if you've signed up for it, whether you raise like $10 or $10,000, you've pretty much committed to doing it at this point.
Well, don't most 5Ks include an entry fee that is nominal so that you don't need to bother your friends and coworkers to help support the entry fee, Marshall?
But you're raising money. I mean, he's raising money for children with brain cancer.
It's a wonderful cause.
It is a noble cause.
Show me where to donate and I'll do it. I just find it kind of funny that you need to, like, not just anybody can show up and run this 5K. You know, it's like the Boston Marathon. You got to raise, you know, like $10,000, $12,000 in order to offset all the costs. This one, they're not even closing any roads. They're just running around like a field.
That was one of your complaints earlier, is that we were going to close roads. And now that we're not closing roads, you're upset about that? Maybe you're just finding any excuse you can to, you know, not donate to a good cause. Maybe
Where to donate. I'll donate right now.
Well, you don't even have to run. Hardy will just give you the money.
Yeah.
Right.
That's terrific. I'm going to run either way. I've already raised a good amount of money. Kristen Sermon donated as well. Sean Silver. Fred Toucher donated. Do you really want to? Fred, Rich, John Wallach?
Yeah, but those
all gave.
Rich would give money to
Joe
him.
Murray?
Yeah, but Rich and Fred are wealthy. So they can afford to give money to Marshall, who's going to essentially run around a parking lot for 15
minutes. What if I were just a guy who was raising money and there were no 5K component?
Tell you what, I'll donate the money if you tap out of the 5K and stay here and do the entire shift with Ryan Johnson. And just no show. Yeah, I'll donate right now. Show me where to donate.
I don't think I'm going to do that. That's not even what I'm leaving here early for. I have a thing between this show and the 5K.
He has to coach soccer. I've got
a whole group of fifth and sixth graders waiting for me to lead them to mediocrity.
All right. Well, do you have a link up on your Twitter or something for donations?
I do.
All right, I'll go donate.
At Marshall Hook.
All right, I'll donate right now. Or when I get home. All right. Sean Silver with the headlines. Thank you, Kristen Sermon and Silver and Hook and Ryan Johnston are next.